Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
For 2 years, I didn't attend church. I wouldn't read the Bible. I wouldn't listen to worship. If you're a Christian, I walk the other way. I would have never said that like I was trying to like renounce God, but I couldn't believe a good God would let this happen.
Everybody has a story, and everyone is a chapter, a piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope,
and power.
And power.
It has many characters.
And so you and I
are a part of it.
We're not the hero.
This is Epic.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. When Samuel Warden was 14, his life tragically changed in an instant. His happy Christian family was devastated, and so was Samuel's faith. The hurt, sadness, anger seemed like an impossible barrier between Samuel and God. But when he desperately needed a father's love, he had an encounter that altered his life. This is chapter 32 of Epic, Samuel Warden's story.
I grew up in a Christian home in Arkansas, and my family was a happy-go-lucky family. My dad was a huge comic. He's just the funniest dude you'll meet. My mom is beautiful. She's wonderful. My sister and my brother are amazing. And on July 22nd, 2007, right after a church service, so we went to this church and grew up there my whole life, so we knew a lot of people there. Right after a church service, my dad and I wanted to go get our hair cut.
How old were you?
I was 14.
Okay.
14 years old. And as a 14-year-old, I've always loved fashion. Like fashion, haircuts, like that was my thing.
You were into it?
Yeah, I was into it. And my dad was like trying to get into it. Like he could care less. Like he was just like, he would wear sweats and a sweatshirt every day and he'd be fine. So we went to this place called Sport Clips and we went and got a haircut. My mom wanted to come with. She was like, hey, can I come with and just hang out with you? I'm like, Mom, you're like cramping my style. Like I'm trying to like look awesome.
This is going to be like a dude time.
Oh yeah.
Huh?
Like this was the bro time. And so we get there, we get our hair cut and my mom's like, hey, let's go get groceries. And I was like, yeah, I want to get this new video game. So we go to Walmart and my dad had this awesome like F-150 red truck. Like we're driving it, through the car aisles, trying to find a parking spot. And, we pass this guy and this guy, the only way I can describe him, he just looks super angry. Like, just looked like he was full hate. And I was 14, so I didn't really put, like, two and two together. I just kind of was like, ugh, like, I don't want to look at that guy. So we went and we parked our car, and we parked next to this Chrysler 300. And so we start just, like, walking up, and my dad is just being a total goof. Like, he could make anybody laugh. And so it's my dad leading the way, then it's me, then it's my mom. And I believe my mom was talking to my grandma on her cell phone and just kind of giving her update where we were. And that same guy jumps out this car aisle and pulls out a gun and he starts beating this lady in the face and grabbing her purse saying, give me your purse, give me your purse, give me your purse. And I'm like 14. So I'm like, what is going on?
Wow.
Like this is a movie. Like it doesn't seem real.
Right.
And so he starts beating this lady and my dad kind of looks back at us and says, hey, you guys are going to be okay. I promise. And a backstory about my dad a little bit is he's kind of a buff dude. So he was in the military. Then he was a basketball coach. And so he had a good physique about him. So he could intimidate people sometimes. And so as we're walking, the guy points the gun at me and he yells at my mom and my dad, keep walking. You didn't see anything. And so my mom was on the phone and she turned back to see what was going on. And the detectives and people think that like he thought she was on the phone with the police. That's why he yelled that. And when she turned around, my dad jumped forward and grabbed me by the shoulder and tucked me behind him. And then he was reaching for my mom and their noses came like nose to nose in this video that we had to watch back. And the guy shot two rounds off of two bullets. And one of them whizzed right by my head. And the other one, as my mom and dad were looking face to face, hit his jugular. Mm. And his neck, unfortunately, exploded all over me behind me. And so my mom watched my dad get shot in the neck because she's short. My dad was tall. Her eyes are his neck level.
Oh.
So she watched this happen right before her. And so I kind of like ducked because I didn't know what hit me. So I kind of like covered my face and then I felt something hit me on the, like something heavy hit me. And I realized it was my dad falling down. And so I turn and I look and, the lady that got hit in the face with a gun, she described me as, a scene out of like Braveheart that I looked like I was just a bloody mess. And so my mom jumped down and tried to stop the bleeding. I mean, when it hits the jugular, there's just blood going everywhere. So there was a huge pool of blood. And I kicked my shoes off because I was running towards Walmart to get help or to get a sheet or to help with the bleeding. And I ran inside and I left bloody footprints all through Walmart, grabbed something, came back. And when I got there, my mom is just screaming. I've never seen my mom scream like this before, like screaming and throwing up and like just trying to stop the bleeding. And my dad started, his body started to react to the loss of blood. And this lady came over. It's like, I'm a nurse, let me help. And so she started trying to help. And as I was running back, I realized the reality hit me that what all this wet stuff that's on me is actually my dad's blood. And so this guy grabs me and wouldn't let me go back into that scene. And I don't know if, I'm assuming this guy was a believer. He was a Christian because he knew my name. And he just said, Samuel, you don't want to see that right now. And he just held me close to him and wouldn't let me go for a second. I don't know who it was to this day. I still don't. And so the police are pulling my mom off my dad's body. And then I finally run to my mom and they're taking us to this cop car. And it was just crazy. The chaos, people surrounding, filming, taking pictures of me. There was one on Google that is now taken down, but it said like, this kid looks like a bloody massacre, like just crazy things like that. And so I had a light blue shirt on and it turned purple in the front from just all the blood hitting me. And, they get us to the cop car and my mom and I watched them pull the sheet over his head and my mom just starts screaming again. And I picked up a cart and I threw it. I was a football player. Like I wasn't a scrawny little 14 and I started like getting into football. So I picked up a cart, never been that strong a day in my life, and threw it like three car lengths. I was just so angry, and we get in the cop car, and they're driving us down, and there's silence in the car. I've like, when people say you can hear a pin drop, this was like you could hear a pin drop from yards away. Like, it was just quiet. We get there, and my mom and I are like, don't want to be separated, but they separate us, and they put us into two detective, like, rooms to, like, give a description of the scenario. And that day a psychiatrist said that, what happened in my brain is not photographic memory, but it's a detail oriented memory now to where like I recalled 13 license plates that were there. I described the guy's details in full his tattoos in full detail, the gun, everything. They caught him 2 hours later.
And you'd seen him for seconds.
They said for 3 seconds. So they caught him. The car that we parked next to that Chrysler was actually his getaway car. And so that's why it got really awkward when he said, keep walking, because we were in front of his getaway car as we were walking. So after that happened, I just remember just they, you know, gave me some water to rinse the blood out of my mouth and try to wash my hands off. And we go home and my sister is still living at the house with us at this time. I think she was like 16 or 17. And my grandma heard everything through the phone. So she knew that my dad had passed away just from the shots. Oh. And she walks close with the Lord, so she was amazing. So we get home, and we all kind of just go to our rooms. Like, what do you do? And so my mom, I hear the shower, my mom hops in the shower. And that day, my emotion shut off for a long time, for a couple of years. I went into, I took my shirt off, clothes off, to change out of this bloody mess and threw them in the trash can and stood in the shower and just literally let blood just rinse off of me. And at that moment was the moment I questioned God's existence.
Yeah.
And I was like, actually, I don't think you're real. Yeah. Like, we're a good church Christian family. You know, the question that everyone asks, why does bad things happen to good people?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it was a tough day. It was wild.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
So did you kind of just shut off God at that point?
Yeah. So for 2 years, I didn't attend church. I wouldn't read the Bible. I wouldn't listen to worship. If you're a Christian, I walk the other way. I would have never said that like I was trying to like renounce God, but I couldn't believe a good God would let this happen. It didn't make sense in my
head. And if he was real, you were angry with him.
Yeah. And if he was real, I'm like, this is bogus. I don't want to pursue this kind of a relationship.
Yeah.
And so when I was about 16 years old, and it's not to, you know, be light about suicide. I tried committing suicide when I was 16 on a bridge. Didn't write a note to my mom. The problem that we started having was I started finding pictures of my dad at my age, and we look exactly alike. I'm 25 now, and we still look alike. And my mom would see me, and she'd just start crying. And so she turned to alcohol really, really heavily.
Heart-wrenching.
So it felt like my mom kind of checked out for 2 years.
Yeah.
I was an angry kid. I had a lot of anger issues after that. Like, punching holes in doors, walls. If I could get in a fight on a football field, I would. If I could hit someone, I would do it.
You were looking for a reason.
Yeah, looking to figure out what to do with these emotions that no one told me about. And so at 16, it was like the last straw. She saw me walk in. I was like, hey, Mom, I've got some offers from some colleges already. And she could care less, and she just left. And then she went upstairs, and so I was like, all right, I'm done with this. So I went on that bridge, and I was ready to go. I mean, like, I had studied out how to – it wasn't just like I was – just trying to, you know, get my mom's attention. I was like, I just don't want her to see me anymore. Like, this is terrible for her. I remember about to do it, and I closed my eyes, and I don't know why. Like, I closed my eyes, and I took a deep breath, and right when I was about to do what I was about to, I heard the voice of the Lord the only time in my life.
Right when Samuel was ready to give up, he had a supernatural encounter. Hear part two of his story coming up on Epic. Welcome back to Epic. We believe everybody has a part in God's great big story. Share about yours or find other chapters of Epic on our website, myfaithradio.com. Today, we're hearing Samuel Warden's story. After his father was tragically murdered, Samuel was angry with God, with life. He was ready to give up. But then he had a supernatural encounter. Here's part two of Samuel's story.
And so at 16, it was like the last straw. She saw me walk in. I was like, hey, Mom, I've got some offers from some colleges already. And she could care less, and she just left. And then she went upstairs, and so I was like, all right, I'm done with this. So I went on that bridge, and I was ready to go. I mean, like, I had studied out how to – it wasn't just like I was just trying to, you know, get my mom's attention. I was like, I just don't want her to see me anymore. Like, this is terrible for her. I remember about to do it, and – I closed my eyes, and I don't know why. Like, I closed my eyes, and I took a deep breath, and right when I was about to do what I was about to, I heard the voice of the Lord the only time in my life, like, internally. I just heard him say, son, I love you so much. And literally, I started to weep, and I just felt like this tangible presence of God say, I love you, son. Didn't say I'm sorry. He just said, I love you. And every fear in my body left.
What did you do? What was your physical reaction to that?
I was trembling. I had heard my grandma say that in the Bible, God would talk to people and you'd hear his voice, and he still does that today. And sometimes it's a sensing, sometimes it's an audible voice, sometimes it's just an impression. And it's the second time I've only ever heard his voice in my 25 years.
Hmm.
And so I just remembered stopping what I'm doing and running home. And as soon as I walked in the door, it was the first time my mom didn't cry when she saw me in 2 years. And she just looked at me and she was like, I love you, son. And that moment, our relationship switched for forever. In that moment of encountering the Father's love, I had two options: prove his existence or prove that he doesn't exist. And so I read the Bible through in 3 months as a 16-year-old kid. And my statement to God was, I'm going to prove that you're wrong, or I'm going to prove that you're real, and no one's going to move me from it. And so I started reading scriptures from Genesis to Revelation, and I started realizing that he is everywhere. Like, he's not just this thing on church Sundays. Like, he is everywhere. And so when that reality started clicking for me, I started building my own relationship with God and not going like off my parents' faith. I started finding my own. And I think that's what happens with a lot of people. We cling on to our parents' faith for so long, even as adults. And then when things happen, we go, you know, God, where were you? But a relationship takes two people. And so it's like sometimes it's knowing like, man, I got to really start just enjoying this journey with God. Even though this part wasn't that fun, it's not the end of my story, you know? No. So, yeah.
And for your mom, on that day,
yeah.
Did things begin to change for her, especially regarding the alcoholism?
Yeah. So she would still drink. She wouldn't drink as much that day. I talked to her this morning. And she was just like, I remember that day when you walked in and the first word you said was mom. And the guy's name is Joshua. I won't say his last name, but the guy's name is Joshua. He shot my dad. And I said, if Joshua doesn't know Jesus, he's going to hell. And I can't let that happen.
You said that on that day after 16, the bridge experience?
Yeah. After that moment, I'm telling you, when you encounter the Father's love, it radically changes your perspective.
Yeah.
And she literally started crying. She said, I talked to her just this morning, like I said, and this is what's so fun is she goes, I remember that was the moment where I thought, whoever he's been around, I need that.
Mm-hmm.
I never was like, Mom, I encountered God. I did this. It was just the way that I carried myself after that moment was different.
Did you ever share with her the bridge experience?
Yeah, I did. I told her about 4 or 5 weeks later, and she just started sobbing. And so from that moment on, her relationship with the Lord started getting way better.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Incredible. All right. So at this point, you're 16.
16, yep.
Radical change for you.
Yeah.
What happened from there?
Yeah. So from 16 on, I stopped playing football, which everyone in my high school was shocked about. I had a couple of college coaches come to watch me in ninth grade just to come see. God really blessed me with just being athletic. And
favor.
Just favor with being good in sports. And I stopped and I told my mom, I was like, I'm playing football out of anger because I just wanted to hit somebody. Mm. I want to know the creative side of God. So I picked up art. Out of all things, I picked up art.
Interesting. Was your motivation gone for football? Was the anger gone or was the anger still there?
Yeah, so for football until 16, it was just anger. And then I just stopped playing. And I was like, I want to do something else with this time.
Okay.
And so I picked up just like this, it's called IB Visual Arts. And so I was just learning how to paint, draw, and find this creative side of God that I never knew.
That's a 180 change.
Complete different, right?
Yeah.
And so when I started doing that, I started finding a passion for just telling people my story and just telling people about like, hey, this is who God is to me. In high school, I failed speech class all the time.
Failed.
Like I would stutter. I remember when I forgot my whole content and I was just like, I'm going to go sit down. Like it was just bad. I just wasn't good at talking in front of a lot of people. And when I was 17, I had my first chance to share my story publicly. And it was at a church, at a youth group. And they were doing like this mock series called like the white chair, where like someone sits in a white chair. They tell you that story. They were kind of doing their take on it. I remember getting ready for that and my mom was like, what message are you going to preach? And I was like, I don't know. Like, what do people do when they prepare a message? And I felt like this is the second time that I heard God's voice. He said, I'll fill your mouth. And I was like, oh, okay, like this will work.
I'm going to trust. Huh?
So I get there and I start telling my story. And the reality of it is oftentimes people look for miracles or where God is in a story. And they say like, okay, God, like this happened to me, but where were you? And when I started playing back the actual like scenario, the first bullet was headed for my head. Somehow it didn't hit me. Like the detectives are still baffled today how I didn't get hit by one of those bullets. The second thing is because of my dad's blood all over me, I'm alive today. And the same reason with Jesus, because his blood was poured out on the cross for humanity. We're actually able to live differently today. And so when I started talking about that, 232 students said yes to Jesus the first time I spoke. And I didn't know what to do after that. I cried. A 17-year-old, I just cried on stage. And I felt like the Lord said, I'm calling you to do this for the rest of your life.
In that moment, that call.
And so I was like, fine, I'm doing it. Like, if we do it, we have to do it big, though. Like, I can't not do something, like, full out. And so from that moment on, I went to Bible college at 18, met my wife there, and we've been together since. And yeah, we've been preaching Jesus and radically seeing crazy healings and signs and wonders and salvations that as a 25-year-old I've only dreamed of. And it's just been baffling.
Incredible. Is part of your story, who was the gentleman that killed your father?
Joshua. Yeah.
Did you have any connection with him or?
Yeah, so we just lived in the same area. I think his little brother did go to my high school. I have written him letters and forgiving him. And telling him about the Father's love and how much Jesus radically loves him. The reality, and I'm going to try not to sob, is the reality hit me when I was 21. And I was really researching the Father's love in the scripture for humanity and how much he actually loves us. Because if I don't know the Father's love, I don't know who I am in general. And so I remember like writing some things down. And what I ended up writing out was that day the Father loved Joshua just as much as he loved my dad.
Wow.
And that like wrecks me today.
That's the tough thing.
It's because.
But a good thing.
Yeah. For some reason, like we think because of someone's actions, the love of the Father stops.
Hmm.
And it's not. He loved Joshua as much as he loved my dad that day. It was just a decision. That was it. And so when I think about that, I think about how many people I pass every day who just need the Father's love and it just to be shown to them. That's it. Not like. Change your life. Do this. It's just, man, do you know how much the Father loves you? And you just tell him a story that is unbelievable, and it's Jesus. And, people radically give their life to Christ.
Like, when they hear that.
Yeah, when they hear that Father's love, like, all of us are searching for something that makes us feel validated, that makes us feel like we belong, that we don't have to change all these things to get this love. And so it's like realizing how much the Father actually poured his love out for us. And that's the reality that came to me, is that every day I get that. I don't have to like just do it on a Sunday or on a Wednesday or when I preach. Like, if I never preached another message, his love for me wouldn't change. I want to preach more because of his love. That's just it. So, yeah.
Yeah. When you had that revelation about God loving Joshua as much as he loved your father on that day.
Yeah.
Is that when you felt you could forgive him, or did that happen? How did that happen?
Yeah. So I'd walked around with a lot of bitterness that was kind of just stuffed down.
Sure.
So I encountered the Lord and had that happen, but there was things, a lot of times there's still things that we have to address. And it was that I actually had a lot of bitterness towards Joshua. And so with that bitterness, I wasn't actually able to forgive, because bitterness doesn't allow forgiveness. And so that day when I realized how much the Father loved him was the day that I realized I have to forgive him. And so I wrote a letter that day and I sent it off. I wrote another one this last week. I'm trying to stay in his communication as much as I can with him.
Has he ever responded to you?
He's written one back and it's been good. But it's just, it's really, for me, like, that's just something God's doing in me radically, which is, if Jesus could love Judas as much as he did, I can love someone who made a terrible decision, and I'm not going to make him pay for it. And so I think the more that he can encounter the Father's love, the more that prison can actually be radically changed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think sometimes we think barriers to the Father's love is a prison or a bad decision, when there's no barrier to his love. That's just us. With forgiveness, I found freedom. And it wasn't even like, I told people, if I never talked to him again, it's just more or less that forgiveness was for me. I needed to let that go and say, I forgive you. And the moment you forgive someone, you feel the release of everything else and you feel freedom.
Yeah.
Like, you just do. And so I wrote that, I forgive you. And my dad would have wanted you to know how much Jesus loves you. And so do I. And there were tears on that paper when I sent it, because mm-hmm. I'm just like, I'm writing to the guy who changed my life. And I felt like the Father was like, I would have changed your life no matter what. And it's realizing that just because that situation happened didn't mean God's plan still isn't being lived out. Like, there was still a plan for me to be a pastor. There was still a plan for me to do this. I just think the enemy just tries to take us out when he can. A thief comes to kill, steal, and destroy. Mm-hmm. And Jesus says, I came that you may have life and have it more abundantly. And so I think realizing that the enemy is definitely at work, but he cannot stop the Father's love. Case in point, 2,000 years ago.
As you were sharing your story of being able to forgive.
Yeah.
I know that there are people who are struggling with, they don't know how to lay down the bitterness. It's become a barrier between them and God.
Yeah.
Do you have any words of wisdom?
Yeah.
What would you say?
I think when it comes to forgiving people, I think it's oftentimes the struggle is saying, but what happens to me? Because we do actions and consequences. So because of their actions, I have these consequences in my life.
And they're hard.
Yeah,
they're
tough. I mean, my dad will never hold my kids on this earth. Like, it's a reality.
How do you not hurt over that?
Yeah, I think it's okay being human and going, it still hurts when my wife's dad will hold Cadence. And I'm like, dang, like my daughter Cadence, that's her name. She just asked me where my dad was like 2 weeks ago. And so I had to explain to her, he's with Jesus, just hanging out, having fun. And I think when it comes to forgiveness, sometimes you have to realize that, like, it's not that you have to forgive them because they need it. It's really just because you need it. And I think when you release that forgiveness, you realize the Father's love for you. That's when it clicks a lot of the times. I think it's just, if you haven't encountered the Father's love, just ask for it. It's not something that you have to muster up. It's not something that you have to have a pastor pray for you or anything like that. No one did that for me. The Father's love is always there. It's just saying, the scripture says, ask and you shall receive, seek and you shall find, knock and the door shall be open. Those are all guarantees. So if I ask, I'll get. If I knock, I'll get. If I seek his righteousness, I'll find it. And I think realizing that, like, his love is not dependent on my actions. Like, we still do today. We think that our kids sometimes think my actions are dependent.
I have to earn it.
Yeah, I have to earn my parents' love, when that's not our heart. That's just humanity. And so it's realizing that, like, the Father's love is always there, no matter where you're at in life. And that will change your situation. Not your effort, not your your thought process. Not it's when you encounter that moment that will change you forever. And I'm a prime example of that. Just a kid and a 25-year-old guy just loving Jesus, my family, and my friends, and seeing what God does. So
it's ironic, isn't it, that somehow through the experience of losing his dad, Samuel learned about the Father's love. As you talk with Samuel, one thing becomes apparent. He's not just intellectually convinced. He is consumed in the best way possible. He knows God loves him. And he knows God loves you. And so he looks at you and me and even the man who took his father's life through that lens. And it's powerful to witness. We are so grateful to Samuel for sharing his story. We're also grateful to the team that makes Epic possible. Thanks to Jason Rakow and Ted Ross for help with production. Thanks to Stephen Johnson for our show's theme song. And I'm your host, Meredith Foster. See you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.